Friends of DeSoto, if you've been too embarrassed to see a live Greatest Gen show, now is your chance, because we're bringing a live show directly to you. It's the Streaming Cyboctacular, our live show about Star Trek V, and it's a riot. May 16th is when it comes out, and that night, you get to join me and Ben and a bunch of Friends of DeSoto to watch it together. There's a live chat, there's merch, there's a ton of embarrassment to go around. And don't worry, if you have something better going on that night, that's fine, because you should still get a ticket. That stream will be running through the end of May. GreatestGenTour.com to buy your ticket now to watch our streaming live show. It's almost the most embarrassing thing you can do in the privacy of your own home. GreatestGenTour.com.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast from a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. Oh, shit! Oh, got beer envy.
Yeah, one of those days, Adam.
You know what? I'm going to let you talk and kill time. I'm running upstairs. I'm getting me a beer. Stall him, Ben!
Our producer, and for this show we do not have a producer, but our producer is making the stretch taffy as I sit here and vamp, buying Adam all the time he needs to go upstairs and get himself an ice cold beer. Beer, the official drink of the Greatest Generation. Are you back, Adam?
Indeed. How was that conversation you had with our viewers without me? Pretty personal.
I didn't let too much slip.
You were talking about me, weren't you?
I was talking about beer mostly. I try not to read the comments, Adam, but I was reading somebody saying that it's pretty clear to them that Deep Space Nine is not a show that we love as much as TNG. And I'll cop to that.
Has that been made clear? I want it to be good.
I do too. I think what I'm copping to is the fact that like TNG is like mainline nostalgia for me. It is like putting nostalgia directly into my veins.
Yeah.
And there's some parts of Deep Space Nine that I really love and remember fondly, but it's just not the series I was weaned on. So I have a different relationship with it.
I mean, you know, like a lot of comments that aren't intended to make the hosts feel bad and yet unfortunately do. Like, I feel a little bad to hear that because I feel like I'm putting in the energy into the show of someone who loves the show.
Yeah.
I would wonder what exactly about what we're doing here would indicate that we don't love it. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, at this point, and maybe into the future, I may not like Deep Space Nine as much as Next Gen. That doesn't mean I hate Deep Space Nine.
These motherfuckers made an amazing podcast about TNG only to trick me into watching their Deep Space Nine podcast and ruining it for me.
The podcast about Deep Space Nine is a war crime.
Who is paying for this? They should be ashamed of themselves.
The Grove is a much better mall.
The parking structure at the Grove show you when a space is empty. But at Americana, there are no lights above the spaces.
Those people that wait and wait for someone to leave their parking stall is a thought crime.
Just go up to the next level.
My Peugeot can park in a motorcycle spot.
I would not trust these people to clean my Citroën on the third floor where the car wash is.
You know, I find that voice more difficult to do than Cosby. on the throat. That's a real clench.
Maybe those characters will meet one day, but not today, Adam.
No, certainly not. Instead, we're introduced to another strange-voiced character. What do you say we get into Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 10, Ben? The Nagus.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
So we get a open that is a creepy Ferengi creeping around. And a character of another alien race that I will call Ersatz Mr. Hum. and then like a hooded character with a pretty blingy walking stick. And they're just creeping at the beginning of this ep.
An unfortunate leitmotif being that people wearing hoods frequently end up being bad characters on this show. This scoliosis-addled hooded person would foreshadow such a theme.
The Ferengi at the top of his walking stick does not look terribly dissimilar from Mel Brooks' character Yogurt in Spaceballs.
Merchandising!
They look so similar that it makes me feel like they're sending a message with this. Like they're winking back at Mel Brooks, like, I see you, Mel Brooks. We're big fans over here at Team Deep Space Nine.
We're willing to make a silly alien character as well. It looked so much like Yogurt that I was like, did Yogurt also have a cane that had his head at the top of it?
I am positive you will correct me about this, Ben, because you're the more learned host on this show than me.
But what the F are you talking about?
Isn't there like a Da Vinci thing about like where the eyes are in the face? A lot of people, until they draw a human face, aren't aware that the eyes are in the dead center of the head. Like,
right, it's like it's a like a cognitive bias illusion where you're right. So focused on facial features that they seem disproportionately large on the face, but if you actually like put a grid over a face, the eyes are right in the middle.
Right, and the thing about this cane topper is that this is a person who has chiseled a face who is not aware of this grid.
Yeah, this is sort of like outsider art, sort of intentionally ignorant art, art that isn't predicated on years and years in the academy studying things like anatomy, Adam. This is folk art. This is beautiful. This is from the people.
When you were little and you started drawing, like with crayons and whatnot, like were your depictions of people just heads with arms and legs? I know mine were.
Heads, arms, and legs, and then really big ears.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Always big ears on my childhood drawings.
Yeah, that's a thing that's fairly commonplace. Some friends of ours with kids are doing the drawings. They're at that drawing stage right now.
Yeah,
that has not changed from generation to generation.
That makes me feel a little bit better. Do they do the thing where the ground is like a line along the bottom of the page?
Yeah. Yeah. Great picks.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's why I praise the artwork so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just the way I did it.
So the two storylines in this episode are A, Ferengi, B, Jake is being a teenager. So the other thing that happens before our title sequence is Commander Sisko comes home and finds Jake kind of fucking around in the apartment, getting ready to go to school. And Sisko's like, great news, dude. When you get back from school today,
the two of us are going to Bajor for the start of the Gratitude Festival.
And Jake's like, cool.
For how long?
3 days.
And Jake is not in.
Jake doesn't seem to realize that he's going to see more Bajoran chicks at a Bajoran festival than he would hanging out waiting for ships to arrive.
Right.
What the hell, Jake?
Yeah, man. Like, you got to take your parents up on that trip to Italy when you're 14. It's going to be very formative. Turning that down is a huge mistake.
No shit.
Like, there will be the discomfort of being, like, an adolescent that is still a child and therefore has to do what their mom and dad tell them to do, but There will be girls there.
Yeah. Jake in this scene forgets to put on his shoes and he makes a big production out of it.
Shoes.
Which made me think of something interesting, Ben. If you knew that you weren't going to go outside ever, wouldn't you just put on some slippers or forego the shoes altogether? If you lived on the station, I probably would.
Oh, Adam. I have so much more self-respect than that.
Garrick should be selling slippers and making a fortune. Like, whatever the croc equivalent is on Deep Space Nine, that's what he should be selling.
That's a little on the nose for how much Cardassians look like crocs.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that's our cold open, I guess. And, oh no, there's still a little bit more. Man, this episode has like 5 solid minutes of cold open before the title sequence.
Yeah.
The other thing is we cut back to Quark's, and Quark is like, you know, just kind of doing his normal slimy businessman stuff, trying to rob his customers, being a jerk to his brother, Rom.
You worthless, tiny-eared fool.
I feel like we've seen Rom before now, but maybe he wasn't kind of like established as a character so much.
Yeah, he's really all up in it in this episode. To the degree that he will, like, pop into frame and then withdraw from frame in a very cartoonish fashion. Ben, do you get Al Swearengen vibes from Quark?
As a base of operations, you cannot beat a fucking saloon.
Because I kind of do. Like, I'm hearing cocksuckers that aren't being said.
Cocksuckers.
There's, like, a carriage about him that is very Swearengen from Deadwood.
You know I never watched Deadwood, Adam.
Oh, geez. Well, great show. Sorry you missed it, Ben.
Me too, Adam. The relationship that is established is that Quark really doesn't think much of Rom and dumps on Rom, but also Rom, like, passes those dumps along to his son, Nog. The dump flows downhill.
It sure does. So the Negus arrives at Quark's bar, pulls down his hood, and reveals, like, the oldest, droopiest, hairiest ears. Like, what could only be a testicular analogy, right? Like, good lord. Like, ugh. I expect to see him in the locker room of my gym, blow-drying his head.
Yeah, he needs like an extra beefy comb to get the tangles out of that ear hair.
Ugh. Yeah, it is just a thick thatch, real gross.
Zek is played by the wonderful Wallace Shawn, and doesn't say anything in this scene.
Is the Grand Negus here on business or pleasure? Is there a difference? No, of course not.
It's almost implied that he's like communicating telepathically with his son, who is arranging for a series of sex capades in the holosuites for him. If your dad asked you, hey, go buy me some pornographic magazines, make sure they know it's for me. That's basically what's going on here, right?
A simple nod from the Negus indicates that he wants to run 5 holosuite programs in succession. One thing you know about the Negus right away is that he has a fairly short refractory period, Ben.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So we come back from title sequence, and guess who's back, Adam?
All right, let's settle down.
Chief O'Brien, and he is substitute teaching for Keiko.
Let's settle down.
Keiko, who I guess is still back behind on Earth?
Yeah.
How are we deprived of that conversation?
I don't know. Like, I wonder what the backstory is on Colomini being out for so long. Like, I don't think Rosalind Chow was like a main cast character, but they probably had to pay Colomini for 3 episodes or whatever, right?
You know what? This can be solved with research, but like, wasn't Con Air around this time? I know Colomini was in Con Air.
Oh.
Anytime the Con Air people give you a buzz, you got to take that job.
He got a very important call from Simpson Bruckheimer and had to go.
God. Who directed that movie? Do you know off the top of your head?
I guess I don't.
It's Simon West. Jesus. It's the time when Simon West got a lot of work for Team Simpson Bruckheimer. You got your Antoine Fuqua, you got your Simon West. Who else was in that club? That prestigious late 90s Simpson Bruckheimer club.
How about The Rock? Who directed that? Was that Michael...
That was Michael Bay.
Michael Bay?
Yeah,
And that was a Simpson Bruckheimer, right?
It was.
I feel like every Simpson Bruckheimer movie has the chase scene where they show the thing that the chase is about to destroy, and it's like either the wheelchair basketball team or the lady pushing the pram that winds up being full of cans. I want to make a supercut of all of those.
Sean Connery escapes his haircut in The Rock and goes down to the lobby of his hotel, and he steals that Ferrari, and the German guy's like, "Sie haben meine Ferrari gestolen," and begins that awesome chase in San Francisco. Like it's basically the bullet chase through San Francisco, complete with trolley car ejection in midair.
Yeah, there was somebody doing coke watching the bullet chase going, "The problem with this chase scene is that they don't get a trolley off of, they don't get a cable car off of its tracks sliding down one of these big old hills."
Hey, man, you just fucked up your Ferrari.
Look, aesthetically, that was very pleasing to me, Ben. I liked seeing a big, sparky car slide down a hill in San Francisco. It's great.
So basically the upshot of Colm Meaney teaching class for his wife is that Nog ropes Jake into an academic dishonesty scheme whereby Nog accuses Vulcans of having stolen his ethics essay, and Jake backs him up on it.
If you're Nog, don't you have to come up with a different alien on the spot to be your patsy? Like, you're a Ferengi. Why don't you blame another Ferengi? That's totally believable to me. Instead, you're going to blame the Vulcans, who are like the all-time valedictorians of every school that they go to.
Of all the species, they're the least likely to be homework thieves.
Yeah.
Like, I love the idea of a Vulcan.
Why would a Vulcan steal a Ferengi's homework? Except it's a joke.
Hey, Savik, you see that pad over there? I hear that 13-year-old Ferengi kid wrote a little essay about ethics. What do you say we take it? That's what passes for comedy on our world.
God, no kidding. They would laugh and laugh.
Well, the Negus finishes up his fuckfest and is curious to like kick it to Quark. He wants to have a pretty intense, high-level business meeting here at the bar. He wants Quark to shut down so that they can bring the captains of Ferengi industry around to have an important meeting, and this is pretty exciting for Quark.
Quark is nothing if not a fun host, so he sort of relishes the idea.
He very generously offers the Negus to stay in Rom's apartment while he's on board the station. Does Deep Space Nine not have accommodations for heads of state who are visiting?
I was just under the understanding that the station was mostly empty and therefore would have plenty of accommodations for people.
It seems crazy.
It's clear to me that Quark just hates Rom. And he's just fucking with him whenever possible.
I get that. But like, what are the chances that Rom has a nice apartment?
God, I don't know.
I guess they go to a private room at Shea Remick, they're talking things over, and the Negus is very complimentary of Quark's skills of a businessman.
You've done very well for yourself, Quark.
Because he has this bar that's on this space station that's next to this wormhole, and the Ferengi see a big business opportunity here, and considers it a pretty shrewd move on Quark's part to have started a bar that would one day be close to this place.
A three-tiered lazy Susan, Ben, is the laziest Susan, right? You really load that thing up.
Yeah, it's a real dim sum of nightmares, but...
if you're going to fuck with the lazy Susan, I think you might as well get the tiered variety, right?
Yeah. Well, the Ferengi were like, they were looking around at 3D chess, and they were like, what could we make three-dimensional? I know. Susans.
In this scene, Nog is school-shamed by the group. So he's like talking about having to leave the dinner to go do some homework. And everyone's like, homework? What the hell is that? And Nog's like, well, yeah, I go to school. It's sort of a thing that, the kids here do on the station.
And you allow your son to attend such a place?
Like, what a joke that is. And so Rom's like, yeah, you're grounded, kiddo. Go to your room, and I better not catch you studying.
Rom is not a guy that has the courage of his own convictions, is he?
Rom is the dumb guy who chooses to homeschool his child, but he's not smart enough to teach him anything. Like, sort of the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, ideally, you want a parent to be motivated to make their child better than they ever were. Rom has no such motivations. Like, Rom appears to be threatened by the idea that Nog would get an education.
It's a type.
Right.
You know? Sci-fi is about the present.
Nog and Jake have a falling out, and they discuss Nog's disappearance from school, and he makes sort of an interesting case about why he's not there.
For me, school is a waste of time.
With Nog saying that, like, school doesn't make any sense to a Ferengi, like, what he's sort of saying is that, like, there's nothing about his education right now that will serve him in the way that a Ferengi should be served.
Because there's no profit in it!
He would be better off in a trade school where he would learn the tools necessary to learn a Ferengi life. But instead he's going to, like, the general purpose public school.
Right.
Keiko's not going to teach him auto shop in the promenade.
I think that that is sort of a weird thing, though, because, I mean, the Ferengis are supposed to be all about business and the smartest at business. It's what they're obsessed with. And you would think that, like, you could get an angle on other cultures by learning about them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of the business equivalent of know thine enemy.
If they were so good at business, you would also assume that they had a kind of self-awareness that would allow them to understand that they aren't that great at business.
Yeah, the Ferengis are just all guys that are like, well, you know, like Mark Zuckerberg and Steve Jobs dropped out of college, so, like, who even needs it?
Yeah, yeah, there's not even a debt component to this school.
Yeah, it's just free.
I know.
Like mana from heaven. The Ferengi get their big Hudsucker boardroom meeting together, and Grand Nagus Zek is making a big speech about what a big opportunity the Gamma Quadrant represents, because the Ferengi have had their reputation unfairly tarnished in the Alpha Quadrant as you know, untrustworthy shysters, essentially, and he thinks it's going to be awesome for them to go into the Gamma Quadrant with no reputation at all and become captains of industry anew. Make Ferenginar great again. It's basically his angle.
Everyone's super pumped about this clean slate. The Nagus does a kind of Tony Robbins-esque Unleash the Greed Within seminar in Quark's Bar.
The potential for Ferengi business expansion is staggering.
It's very exciting.
The meeting is kind of like whipped up into a frenzy, and everybody is so pumped, and they're like, come on, Nagus, lay it on us. Who is going to lead this great, great future for us?
The new Grand Nagus! Quark!
And everybody storms out.
It's not a great feeling for Quark, right?
Heavy lies the lampshade, Adam.
He's sort of like the kid in the 80s movie who is elevated to prom king as a joke.
I get nothing for heavy lies the lampshade.
Adam doesn't laugh at Ben enough. Heavy Lies the Lampshade is great, Ben. Very, very funny.
I thought it was okay. I mean, I thought it was worth something. Sorry, what were you saying?
I was just drawing the equivalent of like that, of almost like a Carrie moment, you know? Like, Quark doesn't know that he's in an election for prom king.
Right.
He doesn't even know that he's that there's a chance of this.
Yeah.
And that he is voted to be the next Negus strikes everyone as a grave injustice.
Not just a grave injustice, but like, it's totally out of left field. Like, Quark is a bar owner, and all these other guys are the heads of huge companies, presumably. And right. It's also uncharacteristic of Ferengi to just pass a thing or title of value on without any strings attached.
Sure.
And that part kind of goes uninterrogated for a while. Like, that's the thing that everybody should have noticed right at the beginning. It's like, this doesn't actually add up as a
right,
thing.
Right, there's no suspicion about this at all. Instead, we almost immediately smash cut to Quark as Negus and fully appreciating the scepter and the cape and the hangers-on that comes with it. Like, he is loving it right now.
Yeah, he's like, he's blowing kisses to the babes on the promenade. He's the way he walks has really relaxed. You know, he's walking like a powerful man.
Very strutty.
Sisko finds Jake in the quarters eating the oatmeal of loneliness.
Quaker oats. It's the right thing to do.
And Jake is really bummed out about the fight he had with Nog. He explains to Sisko, like, yeah, like, Nog got pulled out of school. Family doesn't see the point. And, you know, like, it seems like culturally our differences are tearing us apart, even though we're good pals.
Sisko sort of goes through the motions of feeling bad about this, but deep down, this is success. He does not want Jake hanging out with Nog.
Right. And like, he's even getting this from the lowest ranked guy on his staff. Like, O'Brien has even pulled the commander aside and gone like, hey, if I had a son your son's age, I would be keeping him clear of that little Ferengi.
Man, I think you hear about it all the time. Like, a great way to start a fight with a parent is to tell them how to parent.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I don't want to tell you how to raise your kid, but here's how I think you should raise your kid.
Not great. But Sisko takes it with aplomb, like, takes it as read. Like, yeah, I know, man. Nog is a real son of a bitch. But, you know how 14-year-old boys are. You give them an ultimatum about their friends. They're going to choose the friends every time. And this is, like, a bit of wisdom that Sisko's spot on about. Like, you can't drop that on Jake. Jake's going to choose Nog.
Yeah.
Or definitely choose against his dad.
Right.
Like, he's at exactly the right age for that sort of estrangement.
Yeah, you gotta play this with a little subtlety if you're Commander Sisko.
O'Brien, having just dropped an ultimatum on Keiko on Earth about how many more days to stay there for his mother-in-law's birthday party, is like ready to spread this advice around. Hey, it worked for me. I'm back on the station and I'm alone. Did you see that video that someone put up of that episode where O'Brien rescues the green guy, you know, the guy who was hunted? And there's that moment where the green guy asks him if he wants to go be free with him.
Uh-huh.
And they do a rack into O'Brien's face. And it's a, like, fantasy scene that shows all the scenes that happened before of, like, O'Brien punching people in the face and, like, going on adventures and, like, crawling through ductwork and stuff. It's really great.
That's really funny.
Like, one of the great, like, minor throwaway lines that we did that get turned into a bit. Really fun.
Oh, that's great. Where was that?
Someone posted it to Twitter,
oh,
I think.
Man.
I liked it. I'd have to dig it up.
I missed it. Quark is learning that Negus is not the easiest of jobs. He's got one guy telling him, like, hey, listen, there's a lot of people that want you dead because you got this job ahead of them, and I can protect you, but you got to give me cool business opportunities in the Gamma Quadrant as recompense. And they're, like, having the Negus's funeral, wherein they auction off little hockey pucks full of green dust that I guess is his remains.
I thought this was a great bit of alien character work.
Yeah.
And the idea that the Ferengi would vacuum desiccate themselves and then sell pucks of their cremains, I thought was like spot on. That's great.
That's great. And it's also really well, it's really well established in the script with, it's not like expositioned to death. It's like, it's just the thing that they are doing in the background. It's the business of the scene and other
right.
stuff is happening in the foreground. And somebody's like, what the hell is going on here? I thought that was a really nice bit of writing. And Quark has asked Rom to be his bodyguard, and a lot is going on. But he bends over to pick up a coin that has rolled around on the floor, and a hunter-killer drone flies across the bar and narrowly misses his head as he stoops to pick the coin up. Greed saves the day.
Yeah, he would save his own life by reaching down for some change.
Those things are super useful down at the laundromat on Deep Space Nine, you know?
One thing that I noticed in this episode that I hadn't really thought about in the ones that came before is, like, every time Rom and Quark are in the same scene, and especially in the same frame, you really get a sense for how much more eye makeup Armin Shimerman wears than anyone else. It really makes his eyes pop. And I think that goes for every other Ferengi that we see on the station or have seen. Quark is really unique in that way.
Yeah. I mean, Quark's unique in a lot of ways. He also is the rare Ferengi that doesn't have the lampshade. They put more work into his loaf than all of the other Ferengi loaf.
Now, when you're applying your Ferengi eye makeup, you're going to want to go for that very popular smoky eye look. That's why I take a round bristle brush, dip it into my powder, and apply a nice even strokes.
We're using this cosmetic foam to blend the eye shade with the foundation so that it blends evenly and forms a nice illusion of depth and sparkle.
Now, for some of your deeper eye wrinkles, you're going to want to load up a trowel with some drywall spackle.
We mixed the compound up earlier in a 5-gallon PVC bucket, and if it starts to dry out, just add water periodically throughout the day to keep it malleable. I'm Tom Silva, and this has been This Old Sephora.
Oh yeah, it's like the fun and games really cease when the attempted assassination happens, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like the fun and games cease, but not to the extreme that they should. Like, what has happened here is an explosive attack has been perpetrated in the public space on the station. Like, this is something that grinds cities to a halt, you know? Like, they should, like, the station should be on lockdown. It should be like a hard target search for the perpetrators of this attack. Like, Quark is the head of the Ferengi state.
Under normal circumstances, people would be eating in the Rainforest Cafe where this thing went off. Like, this could have killed a bunch of people, and it should have.
And there's no, like, depiction of panic or chaos ensuing after the explosion. It's just like, he, like, wakes up in Six Bay, and he's like, guess I survived. That's cool.
They do a quick scan of the bomb site, and they're like, yep, that's Ferengi. So it's pretty clear at this point that, like, one of his own is after his head.
Yeah, I mean, which makes sense, you know. The powerful have to keep an eye on those closest to them. So Quark actually, like, has a pretty smart reaction to this, which is he starts having godfather meetings with everybody where he grants the requests of his Ferengis.
He's not as cutthroat as I would have expected. He's pretty magnanimous with his dealings, like, to the degree that he takes a 50-50 cut from some guy who's wanting to sell synthahol in the Gamma Quadrant. That seems pretty antithetical to typical Ferengi deal making, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it's like, it's shrewd because it's like, it's making him popular, you know?
Yeah, and if he gets a cut of everyone's work in the Gamma Quadrant, that's good for him. I guess he's going for quantity.
Yeah. So he's sitting there, he's going lulululu with his little puppet character. He's passing out deals. He's like the Emperor of Rome in Gladiator. You know, he's like, you know, like a month of games and bacchanalias to celebrate my ascension to power or whatever.
Commence with the orgies.
Commence with the umaks.
I know you're waiting for a bigger laugh from me, Ben, but I don't know what that is. I don't know what an umak is.
Isn't that when they rub the earloaf?
I didn't realize that had a name, and if it did, it didn't stick.
There was some episode we just watched where somebody was using sex to get an advantage over Quark, and I think that they called it that.
Right.
Oh yeah, Vash was umoxing.
Vash was giving Quark an ear jab. So if anyone cares, Sisko is deep in the B story, trying to figure out why Jake has been skipping out on their dinner plans, right?
Yeah, he's like sitting there throwing the baseball against the wall, and Dax comes over and is like, "Oh, Stu, don't mind if I do." Serves herself a big helping. She's like, "What's eating you?" And Sisko's like, Jake's super late for dinner. Feel like we're really growing apart.
Children need to know their boundaries. Or should know. I've been a mother 3 times and a father 2x.
Why don't you go find him and give him a talking to? That's what I would do. And so he does. He has the computer tell him where Jake is, which is like, I feel like I would have done that before half an hour had gone by. You know, like, if I had the power, like, right here, right now, if my wife trusted me enough to do find my friends on iOS with me so that I knew where she was, I would be like, okay, it's about time to start making dinner. Let me just check to see if my special lady is on her way, and if she is, I'll get started. Food will be ready when she gets here, you know?
It sure feels like an extreme amount of trust that Ben Sisko shows for the station, everyone on it, and everyone who's passing through the wormhole to assume that Jake wouldn't be the biggest target for kidnapping on the station, right?
Right.
The idea that he would be late for dinner would send a cold chill up my spine every time.
Jake should have a detail.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, Sisko goes down to the cargo bay, and the explanation for all of Jake's secrecy and unwillingness to spend time with his dad winds up being really touching. He's teaching his friend to read.
In discovering this, Ben Sisko is able to deliver the ultimate punishment to Jake, which is an extended show of affection to him in public. That includes all the hugs and kisses that Jake can handle. Sort of a lot to take in.
More nurking than you require. Speaking of familial mistrust, Adam, it is revealed that the Negus' son Krax and Rom are the schemers behind the attempted Quark assassination. And they try one more time to take Quark out by closing him in an airlock.
Sorry, Quark, but you've just been voted out of office.
They're about to punch the button that blows him into space, and he's doing his groveling for mercy one more time. And out of the shadows comes Negus Zek, and it's like, "Don't do it, guys. This was all actually a big test. This was a This is a test to see if Krax has what it takes to run the Ferengi Business Federation or whatever." And Krax, basically, you're a big disappointment to me as a father.
Sort of an emotionally opposite scene from the one we got with Jake and Ben.
Yeah.
Sort of a tale of different fatherhoods.
Right. Yeah, it makes me wonder what was in those pucks.
Odo, in this scene, does that turn into goo and go under a locked door thing? Odo's sort of unbeatable at limbo, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he's like Pee Wee Herman level limbo skills.
He doesn't do it every episode, but I do love a shapeshift.
Yeah, it's fun.
All that shifting.
I thought that it was a bit facile in the script for Quark to be like, "Nice work, Rom. You really showed guts trying to kill me there." Like, all is forgiven because it was such a cutthroat business move, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's safe.
Game recognized game, Rom. I gotta watch my back around you. A guy who tried to kill me.
You made one mistake, Mr. Potter. You double-crossed me and you left me alive.
If you're gonna have the constant threat of death around, you better hope that your would-be assassin is as dumb as Rom. Like, that's gotta give him comfort, right?
I guess so. I mean...
Like, he's probably sleeping great. It's fucking Rom.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Rom
He's going to spend most of his days polishing those pipes. Well, Ben, did you like this episode?
I kind of like this episode. I think that this episode is the precursor to a lot of Ferengi nonsense episodes that I would compare to the compulsory one a season Luoxana and or Q episodes of TNG, where it's just like, I guess every so often we have to fucking find out what's happening with these idiots. And I in my previous watch throughs of Deep Space Nine have tended not to like those that much, but man, Wallace Shawn is so much fun to watch. And it is an episode where this show is like, well, what if the story isn't at all about what's going on with the Starfleets on the station, and instead is about like one of these weirdos? And I think that's fun.
Wallace Shawn is so smart and so great that it is incredible to see him play so dumb, you know, in as many roles, in as many film roles in which he has, you know?
Yeah.
And like to see him play the Negus here, like he so capably does this. He's really entertaining and fun.
Indeed. Did you like the episode, Adam?
The reason I like the episode is Wallace Shawn.
Yeah.
I guess to a lesser extent, the Armin Shimerman Quark stuff is great too, but this is taking advantage of the form of Ferengi that we've come to know over the last 8 years in this Star Trek universe, which is like just the dumb, cartoonish, you know, bumbling idiot Ferengi.
Yeah.
And that's fun, but if it means we get an episode a season like that, like I would hope that they try to break new ground with them. Like I continue to maintain I wish they were more like Quark than not.
Yeah, Quark is more interesting than the Ferengi.
Absolutely. Ben, do you want to see if we have any interesting Priority One messages?
I love Priority One messages, and I really want to see what we've got.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of Priority One messages here. The first one is of a personal nature. It's from Henoviva, and it is for Plavim. It goes like this. It's supposed to be silk and linen to celebrate year 4. And I know I'm supposed to say, go fuck you. But I'd rather say, come fuck me evermore. You said no anniversary gifts, so I thought, what's sexier than a P1? Maybe after this ode, you'd say, still none? Having only seen Data as Sherlock and an orgasm in Sub Rosa, and then there is a semicolon here, and that seems to be the end of the message. Is this this must be Plavim's wife sending him a Priority One message.
I didn't think it was possible, Ben. Henoviva's obviously a great, great woman. And an incredibly patient one.
Yeah, no kidding.
Ben, our second Priority One message is from Henoviva. It is for Plavim. You know what's great is that it's not just Plavim spending the money. Like,
yeah,
Henoviva...
Now she's just complicit.
Yeah. Message goes like this. I promise to watch some better episodes with you, cuddled on the sofa. Here's a toast to many more years with a glass of Romulan ale. and hope this anniversary message wasn't too much of a fail. Now, once again, go fuck those rascals and support Team Plavim. Because Henna Viva wants to get fucked and made into an awesome meme.
Henna Viva has a really cool sex-positive attitude, you know?
Next time we do a show in Milwaukee, I hope Henna Viva comes out.
Yeah, she seems like a fun hang.
We should probably make clear a message in the note here. This was two purchased Priority One messages and not just extra characters extended to friend of the show, Plavim Cleveland. So, there you have it.
If you'd like to purchase a Priority One message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where a personal message is $100 and a commercial message is $200, and they really help support the production of this show. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
It's hard to pick against Wallace Shawn. You know, sometimes you give the drunk Shimoda to a character, but I'm going to give it to the actor this time. The guy clearly went through an epic amount of makeup before every shooting day. And yet, after enduring such a thing, was a full, like, 10 out of 10 in every scene. The guy's fucking great.
Yeah, he really comes right through the makeup.
Which seems impossible because there's so much of it. Really impressive work by Mr. Sean here. So that's mine. Who's yours?
I'm a little torn on who exactly to award this to, but I think that the right people to award it to is the writers of the episode for something that happens with Nog's character. Because at the beginning of the episode, he's saying, "I don't have my essay because Vulcan stole it." And then it is revealed that Nog is illiterate. And I feel like you can't have those two things be true. Like, what he should say is, "Hey, fuck you, Chief. Nobody has taught me to read yet. So while I work on that, maybe don't assign me essays."
Yeah, that's not nice.
It's so fucking, like, they're illiteracy shaming this guy. It's not his fault he doesn't know how to read. He grew up in a bad culture.
I feel like the first thing that you do when you start a school on a starbase of mixed cultures and mixed ages is probably get a sense for where everyone is at, like in terms of math and reading and anything else. Like, you want to level set everyone, right? Why wasn't that done?
I guess maybe it's just Keiko's fault. maybe Keiko. That's who gets my drunk Shimoda. Keiko in absentia.
Yeah. Hope she's having a fun time at that birthday. That 4-week birthday party.
They really should have come up with a better explanation than birthday party.
Yeah, I mean, a darker explanation would be she needs to take some time. This is not going well. I would like that subtext.
Yarmouk, Angelad, and Tanagra.
If you've got a mom or a mother figure in your life, you know how hard it is to choose a gift to give them that says everything that you want to say. But maybe the goal should be to give them something that doesn't say anything at all, while at the same time saying 1,000 words. Because that's what pictures are supposed to do, right? That's a famous adage. Well, what if I told you that you could give this person in your life a gift that was infinity times 1,000 words? That's a limitless amount of pictures that play on a continuous loop on an aura frame. Because when you give an aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of pictures, you're giving them a story every time you send one to it. And it's so easy to do. You just open up the app, click on their aura frame, add a picture from your library, and in seconds, you're making your gift new again. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off, plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use that code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
I've dedicated my life to something: keeping sharp, dangerous things away from my junk. And this is a great thing to dedicate one's life to. However, it has one drawback. Makes it hard to look your best downstairs. Well, this episode is brought to you in part by the spring cleaning champions at Manscaped. And they have a Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra that has two interchangeable skin-safe blades. A standard one for taking a little off the top and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. But this is safe and is not going to give you cuts or nicks. It's the best of both worlds. You look all clean and nice down there, and you've kept sharp things away from your sensitive stuff. They also make stuff for above the waist, like their Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. And whatever you want, you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with our code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your old pantaloons.
Sound Heap with John-Luke Roberts is a real podcast made up of fake podcasts. Like, if you had a cupboard in your lower back, what would you keep in it?
So I'm going to say mugs.
A little yogurt and a spoon.
A small handkerchief that was given to me by my grandmother on her deathbed.
Maybe some spare honey?
I'd keep batteries in it. I'd pretend to be a toy.
If I had a cupboard in my lower back, I'd probably fill it with spines.
If you had a cupboard in your lower back, what would you keep in it? Doesn't exist. We made it up for Sound Heap with John-Luke Roberts, an award-winning comedy podcast from Maximum Fun, made up of hundreds of stupid podcasts. Listen and subscribe to Sound Heap with John-Luke Roberts now.
Oh my gosh, hi, it's me, Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture game show Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play a whole host of games, like one where I describe a show using limerick, and our guests have to figure out what it is. Let's do one right now. What show am I talking about? This podcast has game after game and brilliant guests who come play him. The host is named Dave. It could be your fave, so try it. Life won't be the same.
Big Business, starring Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin.
Close, but no.
Oh, is it Troubled Waters, the pop culture quiz show with all your favorite comedians?
Yes, Troubled Waters is the answer
to this question and all of my life's problems.
Now, legally, we actually can't guarantee that, but you can find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
Adam, the next episode is season 1, episode 11, Vertex. An alien criminal from the other side of the wormhole tempts Odo by telling the shapeshifter that he can put the changeling in contact with others like himself.
Sure seems like the B or C story to every episode could be Odo's journey to find people like him, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
he seems only passively interested in that.
Right, he's like primarily, his primary goal in most episodes is harass Quark, and then, like, if he gets around to it, find out who he is and where he comes from.
His calendar is just two long appointments, like, that are side by side.
Conflict detected.
It's so hard to book Odo for a meeting. He's always busy. Well, I'm looking forward to that, Ben.
Yeah, let's find out if it's going to be a drunkisode. What do you say?
Let's do it. Roll them bones.
Number 4 comes back on the random number generator. And that is not Ella Moraine, Adam.
Thank you for getting that song stuck in my head again.
I actually got a pretty cool suggestion on Reddit of what if each number has a signification. Or, like, as we come up with ideas for other shit we can do to each other, we assign them to different numbers.
Whatever whatever keeps it fresh in the pod bedroom, Ben.
Well, we'll see. Well, that's the end of this here episode, Adam. We should thank Adam Ragusea, who does all kinds of great music for our show, and Dark Materia, who did the original theme for our show.
I got to thank all of the positive commenters over on Facebook, Reddit, and Twitter. You can talk about our show on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. We've got a Facebook group that you can apply for entry to if you so desire. That's a great place for fun memes and comments.
Yeah.
Pretty much every day you could spend your time there laughing it up.
And if you're thinking about a negative comment or a comment that's about how good one of us is and how not good the other one is, maybe think twice before posting that. Like, what is the point of making somebody feel terrible?
Maybe they're trying to drive a wedge between us, Ben. I don't think that's
cool. Divide and conquer tactic of Star Trek podcasting.
Let me tell you something. If you were to succeed in dividing us, there would be no Greatest Gen. I don't think either of us is going to do this show alone.
No. You know what we are going to do together, Adam, is our upcoming Max Fun show, Friendly Fire, with our third co-host, John Roderick. That'll be coming up less than a month from when this episode comes out.
That's right.
So get excited, folks.
I know I am. That is a show we've been working on a lot behind the scenes, and I'm really excited to see that go out. Doing that show with our friend John Roderick and a friend of the podcast, Rob Schulte, doing the heavy lifting on that one.
It's going to be a good time. So if you can't think of anything else, and I sure can't, I think that's it for today's show.
Yeah, I agree, Ben. We'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which looks a lot like a butthole.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.